I gotta be honest. At this point, over halfway through the NFL season, going into week 9, everybody seems banged up. People are getting their meniscuses trimmed. I'm just trying to get through this show without any catastrophic injuries. Hello and welcome to the Roughing the Kicker Chiefs podcast on Blog Talk Radio and on ArrowheadAddict.com. I'm your host, Joshua Briscoe. And the injury-laden Kansas City Chiefs have a game in Arrowhead at noon on Sunday. The Jacksonville Jaguars are coming to town. The lowly Jacksonville Jaguars, if we're being honest. But we're going to see a version of the Kansas City Chiefs that we've never seen before, trying to pull off this victory. Kind of a must-win game because the team that is coming in is so bad, has so little to play for. We'll probably have a new head coach next year. But the Chiefs can't overlook that game. So we're going to preview that game. Who's out? Who's in? Why can't the Chiefs overlook it? How will they make sure that they don't? Then what are the keys to this game? Who is going to step up to make sure the Chiefs do beat the Jaguars on Sunday? Let's talk about it. The 5-2 Kansas City Chiefs will be taking on the 2-5 Jacksonville Jaguars. Right now, as I record this show, coming up on 3 o'clock on Friday, the Chiefs are 7-point favorites over on ESPN's Pick Center. The reason it's not higher than 7 points is because of all of the guys that will not be suiting up on Sunday. A lot of this news just came out pretty recently. Alex Smith is out. We knew that. Nick Foles will get the start. Spencer Ware will not be playing. That's new. DJ White out for second week in a row with a broken hand. Parker Anger now. This is sort of strange. He's apparently not on injured reserve. It's very confusing. Because he's continuing. Like BJ Kissel is giving occasional reports on Parker Anger just being out right now, not practicing, etc. You don't give that kind of update for guys on injured reserve. You say, well, they're certainly not practicing for the next 8 weeks at least. So maybe Parker Anger is a candidate to still return this year, but he's out this week. Darren Reeves, the running back who was on the practice squad all year, had a really nice preseason. I've liked Darren Reeves for a couple of years now. I kept expecting to see him brought up to the team sometime this week after Jamaal Charles went to IR. In fact, I would have kept Darren Reeves over Nile Davis, I think, this whole time, and especially when Spencer Ware was ruled out. But apparently, according to Andy Reid, Darren Reeves tweaked his groin, which is why he was not brought up from the practice squad. Also this week, some more scares. Mitchell Schwartz, he got some time off to rest up on the ankle that he played through last week. He's going to be playing. Jeremy Maclin and Jay Howard both missed time this week, but returned to practice on Friday. They're good to go, but that's a little bit concerning. Keep an eye on them as we go. And as I mentioned in the intro, I got to talk about this just for a second. It's an update on Jamaal Charles. And what actually happened to Jamaal Charles is, according to BJ Kissel and now several other sources on Twitter, Jamaal Charles, quote, had his meniscus trimmed earlier this week. I don't like that sentence at all. You get your hair trimmed. You trim your nails, I hope. Don't get your meniscus trimmed. That sounds horrendous. And I've done some extremely amateur research on what the meniscus is and why it would need to be trimmed, and also why the recovery time for that would be so long. And I'm unable to find any answers because I'm a mediocre podcast host and a terrible doctor. But I'm just going to, that's the update on Jamaal Charles. He had his meniscus trimmed, and that phrase is just deeply unsettling to me. Some good news, though, earlier in the week, Ian Rappaport tweeted that Charles's knee surgery went so well, it went as well as expected, and so well that there's a shot that he comes back this year. And Andy Reid has since said he hasn't thought that far ahead, but with the way the new IR spot is set up, you can have one person on injured reserve that you can eventually have return after, I believe, 8 weeks, basically a half-season injured reserve. That's something that Jamaal Charles may be a candidate for. And I've said this whole time, if the Chiefs could have Jamaal Charles and also Justin Houston back for the last few weeks into the playoffs, having fresh legs, especially for a running back, is so important. It's one reason why Spencer Ware and Jarkendrick West, just as a duo, is really encouraging, because those guys should be on pretty limited mileage by the end of the season. But to be able to have Jamaal Charles come back for like week 17, get up to speed, and then potentially be a real force in the playoffs, even as your third running back, but just to have a guy that you trust that fully on fresh legs coming back for the playoffs would be incredible. But I'm afraid to get my hopes up too much, especially after this real dud of a return form just now. But anyway, all of that, all of that news, all of those injury notes there, that all means that, as we expected, Nick Foles and Charcandrick West will be getting the starts at quarterback and running back in this game. Charcandrick West led the team in rushing last year. With how good Spencer Ware has been and how good Jamaal Charles was before, I think we sort of forget how, or maybe just I forget, that Charcandrick West was a very valuable running back last year, and a pretty good workhorse even. It was to where Spencer Ware was the more of a change of pace kind of guy. And West was very valuable, very trusted, very trustworthy. I have no problem with him starting this game against the Jags and being usable here. One thing that does deeply concern me is that West got a little bit banged up last week. This might be unfair, but I seem to think of West as a guy who is liable to be injured pretty easily is unfair. But a guy who is vulnerable to injury maybe more than I feel like Spencer Ware would be. Got a little bit banged up last week, as I said. The Chiefs signed former Titans running back Bishop Sankey off the Patriots practice squad earlier in the week. Talked about that on the last show. And, by the way, I feel like I just did a show. I kind of did. If you haven't heard the last episode of the show, the recap of the Colts game, talk about the Colts game, and a lot of stuff about Nick Foles and Alex Smith. So if you've missed that episode, go back and listen to that also before the game this week. But I feel fine about Charcandrick West. Bringing Bishop Sankey is also fine as your third-string guy, but Bishop Sankey's going to get carries this week. Not a question, not a doubt in my mind. Anthony Sherman might get a couple carries, but for the most part, it's going to be Charcandrick West being the workhorse, and then Bishop Sankey coming in. I would say we'll see him on the field for 10 to 20 snaps, probably, which is a lot for a guy that's been on a practice squad and is going to be in his first game with the current team. In his first week with the current team, less than a week after being signed, I bet we see him on the field for 10 to 20 snaps and probably 5 to 10 carries. Maybe not, because the Chiefs are a little run shy sometimes, but that's a lot to ask from Bishop Sankey, and I'm a little bit nervous about bringing him into the fold. Let's move on now to talk about the keys to the game. And within the keys here, let's learn a little bit about the Jacksonville Jaguars. But the first key to this game, because if you think Jacksonville Jaguars game, I think we all think something along the lines of, all right, sweet, that ought to be a nice change of pace. And I'm having a pretty easy time, frankly, thinking of this game as another bye week for the Chiefs. The Jags at home, they're giving Alex Smith a seemingly voluntary week off to rest up, make sure his head is right, gets a little more time to heal. They're missing Spencer Ware. This is the easiest looking game on the Chiefs' schedule. It feels kind of like a second bye week. But this is a problem. In the NFL, it's a problem when you overlook a team. People talk about trap games a lot, looking ahead to the next week. That's not a huge concern here for me, but because the next week is at Carolina, and Carolina's been strange all season. That game could absolutely go either way. I don't think it's an issue of overlooking them because they're looking at the next week. I think it's an issue of, look at all the guys not playing. At this point, the two most important offensive players for the Chiefs, Smith and Ware, are both out for this game, and it is the Jags at home. It's a little bit of a cushy matchup. But in the NFL, even, and this is such a cliche, but literally every week, any team could beat any other team. Now, whenever the Browns and Patriots play, you're going to feel pretty good about your eliminator pick, your suicide pool pick, whatever. But when you're talking about an injured Chiefs team and a Jags team that has plenty of weapons, the Jags might have a stronger group of receivers than the Chiefs do. You got a playmaking offense with a crummy defense. The team's really underperformed for a while. A head coach probably on his way out. But there's kind of a reckless abandon to a team like that, especially whenever you're dealing with a Chiefs team. Not just the healthy Patriots playing the Browns, but the Jimmy Garoppolo Patriots playing the Browns. What happens in that case? Right now, that's what the Chiefs are doing. The Chiefs are the injured favorite here. They're the injured, beaten down, at home, better team favorite. Whenever you go, oh, well, we're the favorite, we can just slide into this game, as any other week of preparation, or as we would if Alex Smith and Spencer Ware were both active in this game. You can't let yourself do that. And I'm actually not terribly concerned about it this week, because Nick Foles and Charcandrick West are playing. Not because there's not a step down to those guys, But with Foles and West starting for Smith and Ware, I actually think the Chiefs are better equipped to not overlook this game than they would have been with Smith and Ware. Now, I'm not saying, please listen closely to this, I'm not saying the Chiefs are better off as a football team with Foles and West than they would have been with Smith and Ware. I'm saying they're going to have an easier time not overlooking this game with Foles and West, partially because everybody knows they're playing with a backup quarterback and their backup running back, in a way their third string running back, who is very talented, but still playing with, at the very least, not their full set of weapons, not their full array of weapons here. But especially with Nick Foles, you're just playing with a backup quarterback, a guy with an arm, but definitely your backup quarterback. Here's why I think he being in this game right now is a bit of an advantage, other than making the Chiefs realize we got to really focus. We got to do this with minimal weaponry. That's part of it. The Chiefs are self-aware here now. I think the defense especially. I think the defense is going to say, listen, Nick Foles is probably going to turn the ball over more than Alex Smith does. Charkandrick West, in the running game currently, is with just Charkandrick West and Bishop Sankey, is not going to be as productive as it was with Spencer Ware and Charkandrick West. So I think the defense is going to feel a little bit more of this game on their shoulders. But specifically for Nick Foles, this is a big day for Nick Foles. For Nick Foles especially, I think he's looking for one more shot to be a starting quarterback in the NFL. He's almost certainly going to be a free agent next year, unless they come up with a restructured thing with the Chiefs. And he may not get another shot to start a game this year with the Chiefs. This might be his last big audition to get one more team to at least give him a chance to go compete for a starting job in training camp next year. He, I'm sure, really wants to put on a dominant performance here over a poor defense. He has a great opportunity with this Jags team to say, let me be Nick Foles of the that year in Philadelphia, and let me see if I can get a team like the Browns to pay me next year to come in and see what I can do. Nick Foles is definitely not an autopilot this game. I don't think Alex Smith would have been an autopilot. I think he would have done a very good job focusing in on this Jags team, but Nick Foles definitely isn't. This is the biggest game for Nick Foles in years, frankly. He didn't have a game this big for him back in St. Louis with the Rams, or in training camp in LA for the little bit of time he was there. So I think this is setting up pretty well, at least for Nick Foles, to make sure he's 100% into this game, and it's a big day for him. I think overall the whole team will come together and not actually overlook this game, partially because they are really beaten down, and they all know that. Let's talk about the Jags a little bit more here. The Jaguars have won two games this year. They beat the Colts in London, and they won in Chicago in Week 6 after their bye week. So off the bye, they won a road game. Last week, they just lost to the Titans in Tennessee, 36-22. Gus Bradley has been on the hot seat. It feels like basically since he got hired, he got a vote of confidence from the owner saying he's not going to get fired this week after the last loss, I believe, which is not, you don't ever want to have to get a vote of confidence. You should just know that your job is safe if your job is actually safe. Gus Bradley is not. They're in trouble as a franchise, and they've invested in Gus. I think I saw somewhere that Gus Bradley's record as the head coach of the Jags is 14-41, I believe. The Jags have invested in him for 55 games, if that number is right. And it's not getting better. Blake Bortles is not miserable as a quarterback, but I don't think he's the answer. He's got some nice weapons around him. And frankly, to some extent, it's kind of hard to figure out why the Jags have moved forward, have progressed so little. That's where the Jags are currently. I think they are ripe for the picking here to come into Arrowhead and just get steamrolled. But again, whenever your team is as desperate and as bad to show anything good and as bad across the board as the Jags are, I think there's a little bit of a recklessness that teams like that can play with that makes them dangerous. Think back to the Tyler Thigpen Chiefs occasionally. I don't know why that's what sticks out in my mind so much, but it definitely does. Sometimes with teams with nothing to lose play like that and actually, you know, make something out of it. More often than not, teams with nothing to lose do go back to losing, but that's something that you can keep in mind is another reason not to overlook this game. But how do the Chiefs keep the bad teams down? You keep beating them with what they've shown to be their biggest weaknesses so far. For the Jags, one of those things is that they can't stop the run. And we're beating a dead horse here because the Raiders are 28th in stopping the run this year. And so we're saying that against the Raiders, the Colts 21st. The Saints are, let's see if I can find the Saints on this chart, 18th. And Jacksonville is right there, and that Sam old good company, 27th in the league, giving up 124.7 yards per game on the ground. 124 yards, almost 125 yards per game. I think this might be the easiest way to win football games or to beat bad teams. I can start from the bottom here and move up for a while before I get to a good team, saying these are teams giving up the most yards on the ground. San Francisco, Cleveland, Miami, Houston, Oakland, Jacksonville, Washington, Buffalo. Is Buffalo good? Buffalo is fine. Tampa Bay, then Denver, which is a surprising one. Whenever we get to the Broncos in a few weeks, that's going to be something we talk about. But it's easy to beat teams with really bad run defenses, in my mind, unless their offense is tremendous, which is why Oakland can still be good and be 28th in the league. But if you can actually control the game on the ground, score your touchdowns, not settling for field goals, but score your touchdowns on the ground, you're eating up the clock like you don't do in the passing game. You are just the game is leaking time. You're moving the ball at a nice clip. You control the game completely. And as long as you can hold your own on defense, which the Chiefs have done for these last 3 weeks, I don't know how you lose that game. You have to have big holes on your defense, and the Chiefs don't seem to have that right now. Also for the Jags, they just strictly by points per game, they are 25th, tied with Carolina, giving up 28 points per game. Their defense is porous. And a stat from Trez Paylor, I think, did a good job, or at least an interesting job, of showing another place that they are, in fact, very vulnerable. The Jaguars, according to Paylor, the Jaguars have given up the sixth most plays of 40 yards or more and only have 3 interceptions this year. Not only can they not stop the run, they're giving up big chunks of big plays on offense, and most of those being in the passing game, I'm sure, with only 3 interceptions. Nick Foles shouldn't have to be super hyper aware of not turning the ball over in this game. The Jags just, in all likelihood, won't be able to capitalize on some of his poor throws, but he does need to make sure that that doesn't flip here. If Foles does turn the ball over in a big way, then a lot of these stats are going to stop mattering because the Jags are going to get great field position, and the Chiefs could end up having nice long drives that don't end in points, and they simply can't afford to do that. You can't afford to do that in any NFL game ever. Doesn't matter if it's the Jags at home with all of your starters or if it's the Patriots on the road, you can't turn the ball over and not get points at the end of nice drives. That's one reason the Chiefs have been able to cover up some of their own defensive flaws is by getting turnovers towards the red zone. So how do the Chiefs exploit these big play tendencies that the Jags have to allow? Well, here's my favorite stat of the week, and I have 2 stats here actually, but they're about the same player. Pro Football Focus tweeted, "Throwing to Chiefs wide receiver Tyreek Hill has yielded a passer rating of 148.5 this season, the best of any receiver in the NFL. So whenever Alex Smith is throwing to Tyreek Hill, or I guess now Nick Foles also, whatever Chiefs quarterbacks are throwing to Tyreek Hill, it is yielding them a higher passer rating than any other quarterback to any other receiver in all of football this year." That's amazing. Which is going to show that Tyreek Hill is making quarterbacks look really, really good. Also, before this week's Thursday night game, so the stat may be different now because Julio Jones had a really nice night, but before the Thursday night game, and this is still probably true, Bleacher Report put out a stat that had Tyreek Hill as earning the most yards per route run in the whole NFL. I'll try to re-explain that if it doesn't make sense right away. But he's averaging 3.84 yards per route run this year. Julio Jones at 3.17, AJ Green at 2.94. I'm pretty sure I don't think Julio had a big enough night to actually jump that because he's on the field all the time. What that's going to show is whenever Tyreek Hill is on the field, whenever Tyreek Hill runs a route, he's averaging almost 4 yards per route run, per play, but he's on the field. Saying that, you know, he could be on the field for 10 routes, but that one ends in a 50-yard reception. He's averaging 5 yards per route run. I hope that makes sense. Both of those stats are going to say two things. He's making quarterbacks look really good. He's making the offense look really good. He is being very productive for the number of snaps he's being given. Keep giving Tyreek Hill snaps. I think right now he might be the most explosive receiver on this team. Jeremy Maclin, I'm having a hard time shaking this feeling of him being a veteran receiver kind of on his last legs. And maybe it's because he doesn't get fed like he would if he was in a more high-powered offense. But I'm kind of lukewarm on Jeremy Maclin. Travis Kelce had a great day last week. I'm cool with Travis Kelce. Chris Conley hasn't really proven much to me. He sort of plays like an older Jeremy Maclin right now, like an aging Jeremy Maclin. Chris Conley is a little more explosive than that, perhaps, but I'm on the fence with him. Albert Wilson has fallen off the face of the planet. I don't know what pass-catching option you're going to tell me is currently more explosive and more dangerous than Tyreek Hill is. So you want to exploit those 40-plus yard plays that the Jags have been giving up this year? I would use Tyreek Hill to do it. Before we go on to what scares me and what doesn't scare me from this Jags team, I want to say thank you to the people who support this show financially through Patreon.com. Over at Patreon.com/RTK, you can donate a little bit of money each month, set up a payment plan, and that's what these people are doing. In the $20 group, it's Ty Declare, at TyDeclare44 on Twitter. Andy Simpson and Randy Singh, at Randy_Singh. Ray Hines, at Big Turf Guy, and Derek Vaughn, at D_Vaughn88. Those people are all pledging $20 a month. You can cancel at any time, but currently, those guys are all pledging $20 a month through this season to help keep this show rolling, to give me the ability to put out two of these shows every week. Hugely thankful for them. And also the $10 group, Christine Roadlander, at C. Roadlander on Twitter, and Todd Sullivan, at Tito Sullivino. And the $5 group, Josh Beadle. Hugely appreciative to all those people. If you want to join that group to support this show financially on a month-to-month basis, you can go to patreon.com/RTK. That's patreon.com/RTK. If you join in the $10 group or $5 group, we'll give you a shout out. $10 group is your shout out and your Twitter handle given on every episode of the show. $20 group is that. Plus, if you have any question whatsoever, it's a fast track to answer any question you could possibly have for me. I will happily answer any of those at the end of the show. Ty Declare asked me a question about a tree falling in a forest, and if Andy Reid would use a timeout to figure out what to do in that situation. I broke that question down. I did some top shelf analysis on if a tree falls in the woods and no one's there to hear it. Does Andy Reid still call a timeout? It was one. I dare say it's the best question and answer back and forth I've had in the history of this show. You can support the show there, or if you just want to make sure you don't miss episodes of this show, subscribe to the show on iTunes or through whatever podcast app that you use. If you're on an Android phone most of the time, if you have an Android phone, you can go download any podcast app that will usually use the iTunes store to search through, and just search Roughing the Kicker, subscribe to it, because as these shows come out kind of sporadically, I want to make sure you're getting them every single week, the day they come out. Sometimes on Arrowhead Addict, it'll take a couple of days for the turnaround process for it to get posted up and then for it to actually be put onto the website. Don't miss it. Don't make yourself have a too tight window to listen to these shows. I know they're so good, you might want to listen to them two or three times before a Chiefs game and make sure you're really not missing anything. If that's who you are, then actually you should listen to some other shows probably. The election's coming up, like the 538 Elections podcast. That's a great show. There are some really good podcasts. If you're listening to this show multiple times, probably listen to another show at least a little bit. Maybe go outside. Maybe, I don't know, read something. Listen to the show at least one time, though. Thank you for your support. What scares me? What doesn't? Here's what does scare me about the Jacksonville Jaguars. Allen Robinson is a big, physical, touchdown-absorbing wide receiver. Allen Hurns leads the team in receiving yards. Marquise Lee has 30 catches for over 350 yards this year. Julius Thomas, the tight end, is still on the team. The Jags are 15th in the league in passing yards per game. Blake Bortles is not afraid to go deep, and he has the weapons, frankly, to make all of those plays, or at least to justify those shots. Marcus Peters, Philip Gaines, Steven Nelson, all the safeties, those guys are going to be tested all day long by this set of weapons that Blake Bortles has. now, frankly, I think that the defensive backs hold on through this game based off of what they've done these last few weeks. They held on and dealt with Derek Carr, with Drew Brees, with Andrew Luck, all of those guys having at least a couple of real receiving weapons, especially the Raiders having Amari Cooper and Michael Crabtree, Andrew Luck getting T.Y. Hilton and Dante Moncrief back on the field at the same time for at least part of that game, and the Saints with their weapons. Those are not weapon-starved teams. And I think the Chiefs will be able to handle the Jaguars, certainly, because I think it's also the worst quarterback of those groups, although maybe the best receiver. I would take healthy T.Y. Hilton and Dante Moncrief for sure. But those guys, Moncrief was coming back from injury, T.Y. Hilton was in and out of the game. The point of that being, the Chiefs' secondary is going to deal with a lot of talented pass catchers and a fine quarterback giving the ball to them. But I think the defensive backs hold on. The biggest key here, though, and this is absolutely broken record kind of stuff. Every single week, I'll say, Andy Reid needs to stick to the run, and the Chiefs have to get a pass rush. But this week, I'm saying that with some optimism. Because last week, I think, was the best pass rush showing we've seen, other than the very end of the Raiders game, if memory serves. Andrew Luck was actually getting hassled through this game. Dee Ford has come back with a vengeance these last couple of weeks. He's really starting to show some growth. I'm happy about the growth from him. I need to see some consistency. I need to see him throughout a game more than just whenever a team is obviously passing late in the game. I think the majority of his sacks this year probably come in the fourth quarter, which can mean good things, but especially against the Raiders and the Colts, really meant that the team was obviously throwing the ball because they were playing catch up. I want to see Dee Ford getting some first half action here whenever there's a chance the team is actually going to run the ball, although the Jags probably won't. I'll get to that here in just a moment. But getting pressure on Blake Bortles, Chris Jones continuing to throw NFL guards around like rag dolls, the defensive backs holding to their guys, not holding like in the penalty, but sticking to their guys, more pressure up the middle. For what Blake Bortles can do, he's still not capable of dealing with pressure in his face. I don't know if any quarterback in football is. The guy who's most equipped for it might be Ben Roethlisberger, who's a guy that Blake Bortles has been favorably compared to, at least as like body type and whatnot. So I'm not. He's not going to be an easy to bring down quarterback. But if Dontari Poe or Jay Howard or Chris Jones are in your face and running at you, you're not going to make a good throw. I mean, that's the reason that Tom Brady lost a couple of Super Bowls, is because of pass rush up in his face. Like that's the prime example, especially that first Giants Super Bowl where pass rush just changed the whole game against an undefeated Patriots team. Nothing stops a good quarterback or a great quarterback or a great offense or the Jags offense like a great pass rush. And for the first time this year going into this game, I have some real optimism about what the Chiefs pass rush is capable of doing. And they're doing it without Alan Bailey, who is, with no qualifiers, a very, very good NFL defensive end. Doing this without Alan Bailey is impressive. Not to say that losing Alan Bailey has helped the team. They're doing it without Alan Bailey, and that's hard. But that's what scares me, and that's how the Chiefs beat it. Let the defensive backs be who they are. If Gaines and Marcus Peters stay healthy through this season, I think we're talking about this Chiefs team being a top 10 defense. If Justin Houston comes back and plays well, I think we're talking about it being a top 5 defense. This defense has enormous potential here because of the growth of Gaines, I would say, is the main factor, and how good Ron Parker and Daniel Sorensen are. Eric Berry has been mostly quiet, but has been holding his own so far this season. Steven Nelson in the slot has been playing very well. Whenever it's a healthy defense, this defense has incredible potential. As also, Tom Bahali has had a couple nice plays. Somewhat rare, but here and there. Dee Ford seems to be growing well. I'm very excited about this defense. I think they're going to be able to hold their own against the Jags. Here's what doesn't scare me about the Jaguars. The Jags are 30th in rushing yards per game this year, averaging just over 72.5. That is abysmal. I mean, that is an atrociously low number to be averaging on the ground every game. 72 yards, 73 yards to round up. Last week I did not fear Frank Gore, and I was proven correct in my lack of fear. I don't fear T.J. Yeldon or Chris Ivory either. That is not something for me to be concerned about. And with the Jags offense as a whole here, they're tied for 23rd in the league in points per game with 19.9, so say 20 points per game. I think Bob Sutton has a pretty clear path to victory here. make the Jags earn their respect in the run game, which I don't think they're going to do. I think they'll probably fail to actually accomplish that. Then pressure Bortles, leave a ton of traffic for him deep in the secondary. Make the Jags move to a short passing game to try to move the ball. I don't think that will be nearly enough for the Jags offense to succeed here. So I think Bortles will keep pushing it deep, and we'll see a couple of picks for the Chiefs defense here. If you're pushing it deep and you don't want to throw it to Marcus Peters, as the last couple of weeks, Drew Brees and Andrew Luck have avoided for the most part. Don't test Marcus Peters. That's fine. So then throw it at Phillip Gaines with Daniel Sorensen behind him. That's going to end up in a couple of interceptions, especially if Bortles is making those throws with Jay Howard running at him, which is like a literal steamroller just coming at you. Whenever Bortles has to make those kinds of throws into coverage up against Phillip Gaines with Daniel Sorensen floating around, that's going to end in turnovers. That's going to end in turnovers multiple times. I think that's how the defense ends up making this game happen for the Chiefs. Last week, I think Andy Reid showed incredible bright spots on his coaching and his scheming on the offensive side of the ball here now. I think he does it again for Nick Foles this week. I say the Chiefs end up with some nice games from Travis Kelce and Charkandrick West, makes Foles' day a little bit easier. The defense doesn't surrender too many deep balls. The Chiefs take care of the Jags at home. My prediction, I'm going to say it's 27-13. Give the points, give me the Chiefs. There are plenty of things to be concerned about here and there, but the defense has looked so good. This is the worst offense that they've had to play these last 4 weeks, and they have done really tremendous things in the previous 3 weeks. I think the defense holds up against the Jags here. I think the offense continues to exploit a bad defense, even with Nick Foles, even without Spencer Ware as a part of the mix. I think they do plenty. I think Andy Reid, if Andy Reid can, whatever it was that he did differently last week, whatever focus he had that was different, whatever mindset changed, whatever he planned differently, I don't think was exclusive to the Colts. I don't think he just saw something with the Colts and said, okay, let's have Tyreek Hill run this and Travis Kelce run this, and then the safety's going to follow Hill, and then Travis Kelce's going to end up open across the middle, give it to him, a 6-yard pass that he'll be able to run for 27. I don't think he only sees that against the Colts. I think he is starting to settle into what his offense needs to look like with this iteration of the Chiefs, with this offensive line, with this running game, with these set of receivers, with usually Alex Smith, now with Nick Foles. I think Andy Reid is starting to find for himself this offense's identity. And if I'm wrong about that, I'm going to be really bummed out. If we just saw that scheming guys open thing happening last week, and that's the only time it happens this year, or only happens sporadically, I'm going to be really bummed out. But if it is the consistent thing that I think it can be for Andy Reid, then I think this offense can actually achieve some really nice heights in these last 3 weeks, and really the rest of the season. Tell me whenever you get to a couple of defenses that really terrify you here, okay? Here's the Chiefs schedule from here on out. Jaguars at Panthers. They've given up a ton of points this year. The Buccaneers just gave up 40-something to the Falcons on Thursday Night Football. At the Broncos, that's a really talented defense. At the Falcons, just gave up a bunch of points to the Bucs, and their defense isn't good. Their offense is great. Their defense isn't good. The Raiders on Thursday Night Football again. Not afraid of the Raiders. The Titans at home, the Broncos at home, and then at the Chargers. The only defense on there that is even, in my mind, a top 10 defense is the Denver Broncos. And the Chiefs play them twice. And the Denver Broncos have such a lack of production offensively that I am not terribly concerned about that. And maybe that's ignorant of me. But as I look ahead, I'm seeing the Broncos, by the way, are fifth in the league in points allowed per game at 17. The Chiefs are eighth defensively with 19.6, and that's after giving up 43 points to the Steelers and 27 points to the Chargers. And the Steelers game was a real game. I mean, that was abysmal. But I don't think that's necessarily what the Chiefs are anymore. I think both sides of the ball has found an identity after the bye week. And that, man, that was the thing that we were pounding here. Is you have to find that identity. You can't continue to be that bipolar team that's playing different halves. Last week was the most encouraging game of football for the Chiefs, because I can say, even though different quarterbacks were playing, the same head coach was coaching that whole game, and they ended up with two really good halves of football. As we look ahead, Carolina, 25 points per game. I'm literally just typing these in as I go. Tampa Bay, 29th in points per game allowed. So the Broncos are 5th. The Falcons, Atlanta, 28th in points allowed per game. The Titans, Tennessee, 18th allowed in points per game. The Chargers, San Diego, I can't type, 24th in points per game. There are some miserable defenses coming up. The Broncos twice are the only defenses there with any fear at all in striking being stricken into my heart. I am simply not concerned. San Diego, 24. Carolina, 25. Jacksonville, tied for 25th. Atlanta, 27th. Indianapolis, 27th. Atlanta, 28th. Tampa Bay, 29th. This is the whole schedule after the bye week. Miserable defenses. I just hope that what we saw from Andy Reid last week is real. I hope this is what this offense looks like now. And I think the defense that we're seeing is the true defense. Listen, whenever the Chiefs have to deal with the Steelers offense or the Patriots offense in the playoffs, then I'm sorry, I would absolutely be concerned. You have every right to be concerned. Giving up 43 points in prime time before the bye is embarrassing. Giving up any, I mean, the dealing with the Patriots at all is going to be hugely challenging. But who else is really scaring you for this Chiefs defense? I feel like I'm bouncing around a lot here, but I'm just trying to find why should we not be encouraged by the Chiefs after what we've seen these last 3 weeks? And why shouldn't they be able to deal with the Jags by however many points I just said, by a couple of touchdowns? Dealing with Atlanta will be a big challenge. They're an NFC team. Dealing with them in week 13, I can take or leave. That's going to happen, and they'll figure it out. Because the Saints are second in the league in points per game. The Chiefs give up 21 points to them. Atlanta's first. New Orleans is second. 21 points allowed to the Saints. And Carolina's fourth. Why should we be worried about that? We've seen great things these last few weeks to good offenses and scoring on bad defenses. It's a little bit out of character for me, I think, but I'm really optimistic right now, and I think the Chiefs are going to continue that optimism by really stepping on the Jags and doing it with their backup quarterback and their third-string running back. That's how optimistic I am. It's kind of nuts, but you look around, you look at what's coming up for the Chiefs and for what they've done since the bye week, and I don't think we're talking about fool's gold here. I think we're looking at, or if we are, we're looking at other teams that are going to continue to indulge that fantasy for the rest of the regular season, maybe with the exception of the Denver Broncos, which of course would be soul-crushing. That's going to do it for this episode of the Roughing the Kicker Chiefs podcast on Blog Talk Radio and on Arrowhead Addict. .com. As always, I'm your host, Joshua Briscoe. You can follow me on Twitter at JBBriscoe and send in your questions, your takes and takeaways after every game, your questions before preview shows. And you can like the show on Facebook at facebook.com/RTK show or just go to Facebook, search Roughing the Kicker. So many different ways you can interact with this show, get your voice onto the show, which I'm always very, very glad to have here. Enjoy the game on Sunday. I think we have reasons to be optimistic, not just for this Jags game, but for the rest of the season. And I'm actually a little bit terrified. The Cubs in the World Series, now I'm optimistic. What's going on? Bye, Mom.